Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast. My name is Muhi Khwaja, an American Muslim Community Foundation. Today we have on Jahan Velji, who is the Managing Director, and she focuses on the portfolio strategy and management at Blue Meridian. Welcome to the show, Jahan.
Thank you, Muhi. Great to be here.
Yeah, of course. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background? You can include things like where you grew up, your family, what you went to school for, all those good details.
Sure. So my family is Indian, but I migrated to East Africa. So I was third generation of my family born in Tanzania. I grew up in the U.S., so basically my dad is a lawyer. He was involved in a treason trial and where he managed to defend his client, but, you know, kind of touchy topic. And also at that time, there was a lot more tension with South Asians in neighboring Uganda, and my mom had studied in the U.S. on a Fulbright, so they thought it would be a good time to move to the U.S. So I grew up in the U.S. in a DC suburb in Bethesda, Maryland. My mom ended up working at the World Bank. And so we had an opportunity to go back to Tanzania every other year, which really informed, as I'll mention later, sort of what I wanted to study and the path of my career ultimately. She also traveled a lot when I was growing up. So I kind of saw my dad have to learn how to cook and do things that men of his generation and culture just didn't do. I was really lucky. We lived in a neighborhood with really good public schools, and where I went to high school, you know, from what I remember, it was, you know, pretty diverse. There were a lot of kind of immigrant and international kids, but also, you know, just a lot of people from the area. Most of the kids, other than the kind of, you know, international people, were either Christian or Jewish. We actually got Jewish holidays and off. And I mentioned that because I'm Muslim, and it was really challenging on Fridays. Like, I missed all the football games and a lot of parties because I had to go to mosque. And so, you know, it's a little challenging growing up in the U.S., but religion and our cultural community was really important to my family. My parents also put a lot of emphasis on education. You know, I'm an Ismaili Muslim, and, you know, we really see kind of education as being critical to kind of building financial stability and wealth, and then having the ability to give back to your community, you know, broadly speaking. And then there was also a lot of focus on volunteerism, again, kind of doing things in your community and service to others, which also really shaped my desire to work in the social sector. And also there was this ethos of pluralism and just the idea that we can sort of understand and learn from difference and where diversity is welcome. So those things kind of really informed my development. I ended up going to Princeton University for college, and I studied public and international affairs. I minored in women's studies as a feminist, and also in African studies, given my family background. I was really interested in international development because when we went back to Tanzania, I could see the vast, disparities between what was happening there and what was happening in the United States. And I always was struck by those differences and wanted to understand them. And even within, like when we were in Dar es Salaam, the wealth distribution is very unequal. And so kind of seeing that, you know, I always kind of wanted to understand that and wanted to figure out sort of ways to help more people have better lives. I went straight from college into a master's program at Johns Hopkins University School for Advanced International Studies, or SAIS. I lived at home, and then the SAIS campus is in downtown DC. So I was able to, you know, manage costs that way. And that was a 2-year program. I can kind of share more about my specific career history, but I ended up going into international development, and just on the education front, got really interested in how do you help build strong organizations, and mm-hmm. that took me to business school, which I never thought I would go to, and I ended up at Harvard, did an MBA there, And that was sort of like the end of my schooling. Just on the personal front, I've lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for about 20 years. My husband's actually Jewish. I met him working at Catholic Relief Services. And we have two teenage boys.
Awesome. Love the background, and thank you for sharing your journey through fantastic resume for Princeton and Johns Hopkins and Harvard, and really positioning yourself as a community strategist and leader. So talk a little bit more about your professional journey through up into Blue Meridian in terms of what you've been able to do, how you've been able to help those organizations, and why that's been so important to you.
Yeah, so after Johns Hopkins, like I said, I ended up working in international development. So I worked at Catholic Relief Services as an internal auditor. And so most people hear internal auditor and they're like, oh, yawn, like how boring. But actually, I wanted the opportunity to be in that role because part of it was structured so that you could go to a lot of different countries. So basically, for the next, 3, 4 years, I ended up going to different countries where CRS had offices and looking up the programs and the operations, the finances, and sort of identifying improvements in all of those. And it gave me an amazing vantage point on just kind of the work in different countries, countries as diverse as Russia, Eritrea, Guatemala, Nicaragua, just all over, and got me really interested in how do you help nonprofits to be more efficient and more effective. CRS was actually quite effective and efficient for the work it was doing, a lot of like large scale, humanitarian disaster food distribution, but also other projects. But it was really about, how do you kind of build the capacity of organizations? And like I said, that sort of took me to business school. Coming out of business school, I went into for-profit management consulting because I really thought that was a place where I could learn some of those skills about management and effectiveness and the tools and the frameworks. I did a few years there. I learned a lot, but I wasn't really passionate about the work. And about the time my first son was born, I was like, you know what? It's time for me to kind of like continue on the journey I set out for myself, which was to ultimately, help nonprofits and build the social sector. So I found the Bridgespan Group, which was very young at the time, but an organization focused on strategy consulting to nonprofits and foundations, and really pioneered the use of business plans as a way to help nonprofits set out sort of multi-year strategies and build their capacity. So that's where I learned a lot then about different domains, and then ended up after I guess almost 9 years there, went to the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation, which was one of the clients I worked with at Bridgespan. And EMCF was really focused on youth development and helping youth development organizations to grow. And part of the model is giving this kind of general operating capital so organizations don't have to do, cull together small grants, every year, 1 year grants, small amounts, but could actually have large amounts of capital to work with. And then my role was really being a strategic advisor to a handful of organizations that I was really working closely with, whether it was a tutoring program for kids or a home visiting program or a violence reduction program. So kind of Blue Meridian decided to spend down all of its endowment and incubated Blue Meridian Partners. And Blue Meridian is a slightly different model. It's more of a philanthropic model where we have sort of investors who are pooling their resources. And then we, as Blue Meridian, kind of help to identify and then make recommendations to fund evidence-based practices that are addressing sort of economic mobility barriers in the US and to help to scale those. And so it's a little bit different than a traditional foundation where you have an endowment and you're just kind of spending a little bit. But here we've raised over $2 billion at Blue Meridian, and all of that will be,
Wow.
distributed over time. So it's pretty exciting. And again, a similar role as at McConnell Clark in terms of working closely with some investees. We call them investees, other, you know, because we are trying to bring an investor mindset. And so, you know, have the opportunity through one-on-one interacting with boards and then bringing the resources to bear in terms of our network and other partners that we work with to help organizations set targets for themselves and to work with them on how to meet those targets. And it's usually really around kind of growth and scale for the most part.
Yeah, so you were able to share a little bit more on the programs and services at Blue Meridian. Overall, like, you know, what's a day in the life of Jahan? And, you know, as a managing director, portfolio strategy management, like, what are some of those things that you're helping Blue Meridian do?
Yeah, and actually one thing I didn't mention was sort of the a little bit around the evolution of Blue Meridian, because it sort of started really focused on kind of scaling evidence-based programs. But right, you know, a few years later now, we actually have sort of five portfolios of work. So there is this sort of nationwide solutions, which was sort of the original core. And then addition to that, we have a portfolio called Place Matters, which is really around regional strategies and the idea that we can invest deeply in communities to create community-wide impact and boost economic mobility through place-based partnerships. So there's kind of a set of investments around that. And when I say investment, again, it's a grant. It's not, you know, we're looking for social return, but there's no financial return. Then we have our Justice and Mobility Fund, which is actually where I spend a lot of my time these days. And the Justice and Mobility Fund is a philanthropic collaboration between Blue Meridian Partners and the Ford Foundation and the Charles and Lynn Schusterman Family Philanthropies that aims to boost economic mobility for people involved in the criminal justice system in the US. So that's our third portfolio. And then we have two more. One, the fourth portfolio is the studio at Blue Meridian, which is really focused on helping organizations get ready for scale. So one of the challenges with our kind of original, where we started with nationwide scaling, is that there aren't always a lot of organizations that are ready to do nationwide scaling. So we are now putting in some more resources to work with organizations that are sort of promising or with a, you know, a few years of support could actually be ready for nationwide scaling to engage with them. So we have sort of a different model that we've been using there, often in cohorts. And then finally, we have a portfolio of work around COVID, 19 emergency relief, where we gave out about $150 million, plus to a lot of it was in sort of related to cash assistance or access to benefits. And of course, there's like a lot more information on our website about all of these things. But one thing I'll just say that it's been it's been kind of exciting to see the different portfolios emerge at Blue Meridian, but there's also been a lot of change in the organization. So that's really exciting on the one hand, and you know, there's been a lot to kind of learn and think about. But ultimately, sort of all of these together, we hope will drive kind of systemic change so that more people are able to fight the barriers that, you know, keep people trapped in poverty and to create more economic mobility for people in the U.S. But back to your original question, I guess, was more on like, what does the day in the life look like? You know, it's a mix of internal and external stuff. So, you know, it could be meeting with one of my colleagues who's leading the Justice and Mobility Fund on our strategy or prepping for a presentation to a group of other funders. I could have a check-in with one of the CEOs that I'm working with. You know, live example, you know, the New York Times contacted him to, you know, they wanted to profile some of the work they're doing, and specifically around COVID and cash assistance. And, you know, we're talking about, okay, what are the implications of this? What could be a good frame for this? How do we proceed? How do we loop in our communications team? It could be, you know, a meeting. I'm through the legacy of Edna McConnell Clark, I'm involved with the Fund for Shared Insight. I'm on their Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee, or the EDI committee. So, you know, we could have an EDI committee meeting, and there's, you know, six or seven different funders on that call. And we're talking about our upcoming core funder meeting, which will have like, you know, 30 people, but we're kind of talking about equitable evaluation. You know, another role I have at Blue Meridian is chairing our what we call our portfolio management committee, or I'm co-chairing that. And it's really focused on like the practice of our work, like how do we show up for our investees? How do we add value? Where are the trends where we see people needing support? And, you know, it could be planning an agenda for that. So, you know, there's just a lot going on, and all of that put together is like, I'm usually starting maybe at like 8 or 9 in the morning. I have a lot of colleagues on the East Coast, so I wake up to a lot of emails. The pull is always to start earlier.
Yeah.
And then I usually got a couple hours at the end of the day to kind of regroup.
Yeah, of course. You know, in terms of, you know, you were focusing on like economic justice, social justice in that frame, and Blue Meridian has committed all these resources to help. Now, you know, there's a big opportunity for a lot of the funders that you work with and that are part of Fund for Shared Insight, and that's kind of how we got connected. So in terms of the opportunity for mainstream philanthropy to support more marginalized and minority communities, what's your advice for nonprofit leaders to engage foundations or partners on this?
Yeah. And I would say, you know, first of all, I feel like the onus is on, or should be on, the foundations to engage with organizations and leaders in marginalized communities. I think,
sure,
you know, so much of the time, right, like we put the burden on the people who are already marginalized. I think, you know, the good news is that I think philanthropy is becoming more aware of the need to engage with different communities and to listen to different communities and especially lift up the voices of people that are least heard. You know, given all the events that have been going on in our country. So I think there's more openness, I would say. And I think it's really hard. Like when I think of like my day and I think about how many organizations can I talk with who are kind of maybe interested in Blue Meridian, you know, who may or may not really be a fit, you know, and everything else going on, it's hard to kind of create that space. One of my colleagues had great advice, which was that as funders, we should prioritize taking the meetings with the organizations that are out of our networks, you know, the ones that are bringing in different perspectives.
Right.
And then I think like, well, how is you as a nonprofit leader, could a nonprofit leader help make that easier for me? You know, again, not to be self-centered about it, but also I recognize like it's hard to get like space with funders sometimes. And one of the things I was thinking about is, reaching out through, like utilizing networks is really important. It's how money, you know, whether or not we like it, it's a lot of how money travels, whether it's in the social sector or the private sector. We need to kind of utilize networks to reach people and to bring awareness about different programs. I'm wondering, and I think it's hard because there's also a sense of competition sometimes amongst nonprofits, but if there's an opportunity for a group of nonprofits to, you know, kind of put something together about like, here, like there are 10 of us and we're all working in this community, or we're kind of doing this work together, or like,
yeah,
this theme unites us, and like sharing that even in a written form is helpful because it gets like more organizations in front of someone quickly in a short period of time, because I think that's the battle. It's like the time capacity battle that that has to be fought. So I think that's one opportunity. I know, you know, in things that I'm involved in, I'm trying to think more and more intentionally about the voices that we're hearing. And also, you know, as I mentioned, like to me, pluralism is really important. And so, you know, I want to continue to build that in the work that I'm doing and in the voices I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think there was something you mentioned early on, and I just want to bring it back to the fold, is like you talked about how like your experience growing up informed what you wanted to focus on later on as your career. So can you share a little bit more about like, you know, your role and kind of what you're doing to bridge that together?
Yeah, so I think for me there are a couple of core things. So one is around inequity and sort of the distribution of wealth and how can I help make that better, and how can we address that inequity? It's crazy that in a country like the United States, that there are so many people suffering and or who don't have access to basic needs, let
Agreed.
alone things that are going to lift them up, right? And
Yeah.
so, I mean, I can't imagine not working in the, what I call the social sector. Like, I cannot imagine not sort of working to help change that. So that's one thing. I think the other thing is my own experience as a brown woman, a Muslim woman. It's, I have been like, I have grown up as the other. Like, I remember the first time I went to India, I was probably like 25 years old. I had never been around so many brown people. I was like, wow, like this must be like what it is to grow up white in the US. Like, you're surrounded by people who look like you. Like, of course, I had, there were people at mosque and in my school and whatnot, but not like everybody, right? And certainly not the majority. And so I think also that sense of inclusion is really important. And sort of how do we help build a society where everybody is included? How do we build an economy where everyone is included? Part of my interest in criminal justice reform is sort of learning over the years about how excluded people who have been impacted by the criminal justice system are in our society, how hard it is for them. People coming out, like, they want to go on with their lives, and there's so many things that get in the way of doing that. Jobs they can't have, they have a record, education they didn't finish. It's like, how are people going to be on a path to improving their lives if every step of the way there are barriers holding them back? So, I think
Yeah.
that's sort of part of the interest in criminal justice reform. I don't know if that sort of got to some of the things you were curious about, but
Yeah, definitely. I think just plain and simple, the brass tacks of it is like there's so many resources out there, and yet there's still this issue, right? And it's good to see places like Blue Meridian putting a lot of resources into their investees. And I'm glad to see that you are living that passion of yours to make a difference in that way. So two things. One, obviously people can go to bluemeridian.org, learn about the organization. They can find you on Twitter, Blue Meridian P. Beyond that, like, what are general ways for people who may be outside of your network that you're unfamiliar with, to engage with Blue Meridian, since you mentioned that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be reaching out to, if there's a specific sort of one of the areas that I just talked about that's of interest, to kind of reach out to that particular area. We have on our website how you can get in contact with us, and we do have a team of people. Obviously, a lot of people reach out to us, but we have a team of people who kind of looks through those and tries to understand what are the best ways to move forward, or if there are opportunities. So I think that would be one way that people could stay connected.
Perfect. Now, shifting a little bit more to like your personal experiences around charitable giving. You mentioned you married a Jewish man, so like they have the sense of tzedakah as well, as very familiar with tzedakah. And what are places that you guys give your I forget the term for, is it Kai? Well, there's like the number 18, or in the Jewish tradition.
I'm not sure. He's pretty secular, just
Gotcha. Fair enough. So a lot of my Jewish friends will either give like in increments of 18, right, because of the significance of that number. But in terms of like places where you want to support Jewish life or Muslim causes or so many other things. You know, you worked for a Catholic organization, like there's so many, and international relief and so many other ways. So just to get a sense of how you and your family decide where to send your sadaqah, zakat, and so on.
Yeah, so it's interesting because in my work life, I'm all about, you know, big investments, you know, and big support to a small number of organizations. But in my personal giving, I feel like I end up doing a lot to a lot of different causes, with some concentration, but it's just interesting that sort of disconnect and the different way to look at it, because there are so many important things out there. And we do give to a lot of different types of causes. I think, you know, for here, I could, you know, highlight some different things. So, I mean, one is the Aga Khan Foundation USA, which is focused on international development, and, you know, helping to build institutions and communities in Asia and Africa, things like hospitals and schools and early childhood education and income generation. I was on the national committee of AKF USA for about a decade, and that remains close to my heart, and also is a connection to international work. You know,
right.
Other organizations like IRC and Médecins Sans Frontières, and you know, there are others as well that we look at. Another organization that's been really important to me is Planned Parenthood. I mentioned earlier, as a feminist, I feel very strongly in the right of women to control our bodies. To me, it's a basic human rights issue, and the work that they do in support of that, and also just providing general health and educational resources, I think is really important. So I think since I ever first started giving money to anyone, like, that's been on my list. And then, you know, I think that another one that is really important now, but I've been, you know, we've been doing for a while, is like the Alameda County Community Food Bank. As I said earlier, you know, it's crazy that there are basic needs in our country that are going unmet, and especially in COVID.
Right.
I don't know if you know, I know others saw these images too, but the images of like just line, you know, people just lined up, you know, waiting for food. It's really hard to watch that. And it's really hard to know that there's so many people suffering, even more so than the usual level of suffering, which is also unacceptable. So I volunteered with them in the past, and, you know, we've always supported their work, but amped it up this year in particular. And there's a lot of other causes that we support, things like KQED and ProPublica, basically things are Marshall, the Marshall Project, things related to a free press, and also rights organizations. So like Council on American Islamic Relations, or ACLU, NAACP, LDF, you know, MALDEF, like all of these are organizations working to support people's civil rights, which I also think is critical. And as a Muslim American, I think is absolutely essential, given, you know, what happened after 9/11, given the Muslim ban. I just think it's important that we kind of continue to protect the civil rights of all.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing a lot of those great organizations. And we have a nonprofit directory on our website that, you know, you can browse through over 500 nonprofits. If there isn't an organization that's listed in there, we can always add more, and nonprofit leaders themselves can go and fill out a form to be listed in there, so that more people find out about the great work that they do. And, you know, just as you said, I think especially given the last year with COVID-19, so many families are either reprioritizing their basic needs, but also those who have the ability to give back, how they spend their time, their talent, their treasures. It's been a real wake-up call for people engaging in philanthropy. And I think it's also a call for people to give more than maybe they had previously as well. So thank you for sharing the illustrious list of charities that you support. In terms of, I wanted to ask, you mentioned being on the board of a few different organizations as well in the past. Do you currently serve on any boards?
I'm not on a board currently. I do interact with several boards through my work. I think I was taking a break after my long involvement with Aga Khan Foundation USA, and but I think board service is an amazing way to learn about the work of a nonprofit organization and to support the work of an organization. Boards often are helping to fundraise, as you know, but not exclusively, bringing strategy, bringing experience. And I think the more and actually going back to your earlier question, I mean, I think the more that we can have diverse people on boards and people bringing diverse perspectives is actually really important, again, because of the networks, the money flows, and the opportunity to kind of lift up voices to be factored in as organizations are planning their priorities.
Yeah, I think, we're so thankful to our board members, our advisory council members, our part-time staff, our volunteers. Like, everybody plays such a critical role in the success of American Muslim Community Foundation and any of the nonprofits that I've ever been part of. Like, those board members are hypercritical. And just people who have the time, have the skill set, just want to help out, be a sounding board, somebody who can always talk to the mission, right? And just share it with their network. Like, having those people in your corner means the world to a nonprofit organization. So, for anybody out there that's listening, like, if you have the time to give back, joining a board is a phenomenal way of doing that. So yeah, I mean, is there anything else that you just want to share with our listeners that, it could be about you, it could be about Blue Meridian, it could be about nonprofits in general, philanthropy, this whole space, anything else that you'd like to share?
So there are two things. One, sort of picking up on giving. I'm one of those people that always checks the box for the organization to use the money as they deem best. And the reason I do that is because I think it's important for organizations to have that flexibility. Sometimes there are specific campaigns, but I do, as a plug for nonprofit leaders, I feel like it's really important for people to trust those leaders to know kind of how best to direct the capital to drive the biggest impact. So that's just my plug. And then sort of on a kind of more philosophical level, I think we've been living through a really complicated time. And there's a lot of division and animosity. And on the other hand, we also see large groups of people, coming together to call out racism and injustice and to work together. And I just want to say, I, as a Muslim American, I appreciate the support of other communities, and I try to support other communities. And I think that's really important. We can't frame things as one group against the other, because we all need to work together. And it's a quote we've all heard from, Dr. Martin Luther King, but a threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I'm probably paraphrasing that, not a direct quote, but basically, like, it's in the interest of all of us, to work together to a more just world and a pluralistic society that has room for everyone. So I guess that would be my kind of final thought that I would want to share.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody out there listening that can disagree with that sentiment. And to that point, like, one of the things that AMCF has been doing the last few years is establishing giving circles across the country or joining, hosting other giving circles that already exist. And the beauty of that is you learn together about common causes that you may not have known about. You build this community of people who are giving together. And one of the giving circles that we're launching in 2021 is an interfaith giving circle confronting hate. So I think fully in alignment with everything you just said, it's about engaging people, learning about them, but then also supporting critical organizations that are leading this work. There's a lot of interfaith councils, and there's a lot of organizations that are fighting xenophobia, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, all these things. But if we can put our money where our heart is and take it a step further and learn about those causes on the ground that are really doing phenomenal work to break down these barriers, whether it's through a social justice perspective or economic perspective or climate change or so many things that can be done through interfaith work to further that mission. Those are the things that we're hoping this group comes together to learn about. So just wanted to plug our Giving Circle there. And you can obviously find out about Giving Circles, the donor advised funds, the endowments, and everything that we do at our website. But Jahan, this has been a really fantastic conversation, and I'm glad that we had an opportunity to meet and give you an opportunity to share more about your background in Blue Meridian. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm so impressed by the work that you're doing, and it was really, really great to meet you.
I appreciate it. Have a good one.